Welcome to season two, episode five of Social Anxiety Life. And in this episode, we're going to discuss whether social media can affect social anxiety. But before we delve into that topic, just a reminder for you to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform to know when new episodes are available and to join our Facebook group at Social Anxiety Life Podcast Group.
Amazing. So this week, our first contribution comes from Emmeline on Instagram, who says, "I think what you see on social media isn't always what's happening in real life. It can make people think when they see it, well, this isn't my life. I need to do better, when it can just be a short moment, not the whole of someone's life. But it can make people feel anxious about what they're achieving."
Well, that's a lot. That's a lot,
to unpick.
I suppose that social media, there's almost a discrepancy between the social media portrayal and the real life experiences. Because I think if you see stuff on social media about, you know, people having gone to a social event and having a good time, then you may feel as though you've missed out.
Yeah. And I think when people post on social media, we all do it, you do sort of put your best version of you forward, don't you? You know, you're not going to post necessarily the difficult moments in the social situations all over your Instagram. You're going to put a picture where you look happy and you're with people and you're having fun. And like Emmeline says, it might just be a short moment in time, but I suppose it's about how other people might perceive that and then how it might make them feel about their own anxiety.
I suppose for me that with social media, it's changed constantly. It's gone through quite a big change, because I remember, you know, back when it was, you know, internet chat rooms in the early 2000s, that was quite something. And then it sort of migrated through, you know, to Facebook. I remember Facebook around sort of 2007, 2008 time. And then you've got sort of Instagram, you've got TikTok, you've got a number of other social media outlets as well. And I suppose for some people, the social anxiety almost could make you feel inadequate. It could make you feel that, yeah, you've seen all these people having a great time and you've decided not to go to that. And you may have told people that you're not going because you're unwell, when actually it was a way to get out of it.
Yeah.
Or whether you're more confident enough to say, well, actually, I didn't go to that, or didn't want to go to that because I have social anxiety and I think that it would have been too much for me. But it doesn't stop then the comparing yourself to other people.
Yeah. And I think your point is really important about how social media has changed, because, you know, I remember when I was a teenager, social media was going home, logging onto the home computer and going on MySpace or Bebo or whatever the things were when I was younger. And so it wasn't really that accessible. Whereas now it's everywhere. It's like it's on your phone all the time. So you're even more exposed to people's posts of them going out and doing things, going on their holidays, going to social events. And as you said, I suppose it's whether that affects you because maybe you feel inadequate and then you start to compare, or for some people maybe it's not something that affects them or bothers them.
I mean, personally for me, I don't think that social media contributes to my social anxiety. Not a lot. And something from one of our other contributions sort of ties in with that. So Lisa got in touch with us via Instagram and said that they think it encourages communication via social media rather than in person, more so since lockdown.
Yeah.
So then when we come to a social occasion, it makes people very anxious. I know it's affected me and a few people, and I know this way, it's a blessing and a curse, really. And I think that's a really key point to mention lockdown, because lockdown affected people in so many ways. In the for work, for example, I remember that when we worked together during lockdown, we, you know, you had to transition to working at home. You had to have Zoom meetings. You had to have video calls.
Yeah.
And I'll admit, I quite liked it.
Yeah.
In that respect. And the online communication, I find even now that when I have Zoom meetings, I feel better in those because it's not in person. It's through a screen.
Yeah.
And I feel more comfortable with it in that, you know, you've got people on the screen, you're talking about what you need to talk about, you've got everything around you that you need. And I will admit sometimes that, you know, I've lost connection if I need a moment or my screen's gone off.
Yeah.
And there are challenges then in that sort of transition aspect between the online social aspect to in-person interactions. Is there such a difference?
I would agree with that, because I think your point about when it was lockdown, you know, I remember we still had sort of work dues, you know, work, I think it was it a Christmas party or something? You know, and it was on Zoom. And I really quite enjoyed it because I was in the comfort of my own home, still got to see everyone, but, you know, it was all quite nice. And then I do remember like that transition from being used to just almost all of your interaction being over a computer to suddenly you're like surrounded by people again and you're in a busy work environment and suddenly people are inviting you here, there, everywhere. That was a hard transition to make, and I can imagine that some people really would have struggled with that.
Moving on to another contribution we've had from Jenna via Instagram. And actually, while we're talking about Jenna via Instagram, I actually did an interview with Jenna about a week ago now. It was unconnected with social anxiety, and it was very interesting talking to her, but she provided a quote about it from a business perspective. So she's a business owner, and she talked about the anxiety of not doing enough and that social media doesn't allow for a day off, even if you schedule posts. You want to keep doing well, but mentally you don't get a break, but then that can cause anxiety because you need to rest. And I know that she talked further about, you know, something like Instagram, where, you know, it's likes, it's follows, it's your content, your engagement. There's, or how people are receiving your content.
Yeah.
Which is a different kind of social context than we've talked about.
Yeah.
Previously.
I suppose from a business point of view, that's really important, isn't it? To get that feedback and to have that interaction and those likes and comments. I suppose that adds another level of pressure to be engaged with social media.
I think as following on from that, that, you know, posting on Instagram, I mean, I have a personal and professional Instagram account, and I will admit there have been periods where I've, you know, created content and been really annoyed that it hasn't been got as much attention as I think it would have got. But that's not to do with the social anxiety. It's to do with the actual content itself. And I will admit, through particularly Instagram, I've formed a lot of new connections.
Yeah.
Which can only be beneficial. Now, that doesn't transcend into things like, you know, do you want to meet up or groups or anything like that? It hasn't transcended into any of that. I think if it did, I don't know how I'd feel about it. Although saying that, when it was the internet chat room days, I freely admit I did meet up with people that I may have chatted to, and I probably didn't think anything of it at the time. But actually now I think, oh my goodness, wow, I may have met up with someone I was chatting with, and
yeah,
everything. But it's almost with Jenna, it's putting those strategies in place for setting boundaries, because that pressure sort of to keep up and, you know, grow your following.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be about that. It should be about how you use it and how you want to use it and how you think you're going to have things that you want to say put out there.
Yeah. And that point she made about sort of feeling like you always have to be on, I suppose, you know, I've heard of, never done it myself, that idea of sort of like the digital detox, you know, going a day or going a few days, like no phone, just completely sort of cut yourself off from all your social media. I mean, what do you think about that as an idea of, you know, maybe if someone is suffering with social anxiety and maybe they are looking at posts and it's just making them feel bad about themselves or it's giving them extra stress, you know, the idea of that, I think, is probably quite a positive one.
Yeah, I have a friend actually who said to me that now, I mean, they don't look at their phone for the first hour in the morning.
That's very good.
And they don't look at it last hour at night. Yeah. So between, say, so 9 o'clock when they go to bed, phone is where it needs to be. We're not flicking through a phone.
Yeah.
They might read a book. Mm-hmm. They might meditate. And in the morning, you know, rather than getting up straight away and looking at your phone, they might go through it, might guess in the garden.
Yeah.
And then there's nothing going on until, say, 7 o'clock. I personally would find that quite tricky.
Yeah.
I mean, I find it better in the evening where I can sort of put it aside and just, you know, take in the day and, you know, get to try and get to sleep. I mean, we've spoken before in a previous episode about sleep.
Yeah.
And I personally find sleep tricky, really tricky. And the phone doesn't help.
Yeah, of course.
But I agree, the digital detox is good, because there's certain things you can do on your phone. You can set timers on your phone. You can set a limit for how many hours in the day you can look at your social media. But of course, with that, you can also unlock it and put it back to where you want it.
Yeah.
Or where it shouldn't be.
Yeah, absolutely. There was another contribution actually through Instagram, CJ, which was also along the sort of professional route. And I found this one really interesting. CJ says, I think there's a few reasons. Less likely to speak to people in real life, so less likely to use skills. Comparing posts, people's and followers, especially teacher accounts. You never feel like you're doing as well as others or how much more you could be doing, linking to insecurity and worthlessness. Now, I thought that was a really interesting point, because I personally have a little bit of a love-hate relationship with teacher accounts, because I think there are some brilliant ones out there and they've got great ideas, and there's loads of sort of accounts just around education in general that I think are really useful. But I could definitely relate to that point about sort of some accounts. It's very much like, look at this thing I've set up in my classroom, or look at this. And sometimes you look at them and it's just not realistic. You look at it and it's just not something I actually would ever, I'd love to do it. It's like, I just do not have enough time in my day, in my life, to do something like that. And then you do feel a little bit bad and you do feel like, should I be doing more? And I've definitely had that experience before.
I think that you can look at things like Instagram, and so if you're looking at it professionally or personally, in terms of you've got work stuff and you've got things that people do outside of work. And yeah, I can see that sometimes you might feel, oh, I should have been there. I should have taken part in it. And it comes back to something that I think we've said before about it's putting the emphasis on you rather than the other people. And using your example of the teacher Instagram or the teacher Pinterest fad.
Yeah.
I've looked at teacher Pinterest stuff and I just think immediately, where do you find the time to do that? Because I wouldn't spend my time doing that. I would not spend my time getting, like, I know if you're an educator, you'll know what I'm talking about when I say, like, a big tough tray.
Yeah.
And it has all this lovely writing in it and all this lovely things on it. And, you know, the children are going to redevelop that, which is a kind word, within 2 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
And you shouldn't feel like that at all. You shouldn't feel that when you're looking at social media for ideas, I tend to look at it and think, that looks good, but I wouldn't do it like that, or I'll change it to suit me. But that's more kind of a different kind of anxiety almost, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I suppose that's, I guess, the more of the sort of comparison, I guess, a little bit, but also worrying about whether you're doing enough or wishing you could do that. Because I've definitely had that experience with those types of posts, probably more in the past than I would now. But I think you might have touched on this already. Personally, I wouldn't say that social media does particularly contribute to my social anxiety, but it's been really interesting with the contributions. There's actually quite a few sort of saying the opposite, aren't there?
I mean, incidentally, before we talk about the next one, this is actually where we've had the most contributions out for any episode, is this social media one. Anonymous contribution via Instagram talked about the comparison of not feeling good enough and imposter syndrome, etc. Then it spirals. And that immediately says to me, it links in with how you feel about yourself and self-worth and its connection to social media. So if you see someone out having a good time at a party, for example, that can make you feel as though, well, if I don't go out to parties, I should start going out to them. When actually, if you haven't gone or you're not going, that's enough.
Yeah. And that point about it spiraling links to sort of the overthinking aspect of social anxiety, isn't it? It's that getting that negative thought and then struggling to sort of break out of that and just kind of having the same thoughts over and over and building them up.
And I suppose actually, as we said earlier in the episode, social media is everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's how much do you embrace it? Do you embrace all of it? Are you there for hours a day scrolling through, responding, creating content? Do you set yourself a limit or you don't look at it at all?
Yeah.
Another contribution via Facebook from Hannah talked about struggling with social media and finding, as we said earlier, often find posts containing photos of people out enjoying themselves and socialising. A reminder how lonely life can be when you have social anxiety. And having an element of FOMO, fear of missing out.
Yeah.
So the social media triggers FOMO and loneliness.
Yeah. And I would assume that's because of looking at the posts of other people and seeing them out and about and doing things and maybe doing things that you find challenging. And then, as you said, sort of, then you start to feel like you're missing out on an aspect of life.
Yeah, I think on one hand, you know, if you're at one with your social media stuff, there's evidence suggests that it triggers dopamine, the feel-good hormone within your brain. So if you're seeing those likes and follows and engagement at good level, at the levels that you want, it does make you feel good. But on the other hand, as Hannah pointed out, that it's almost what you're looking at on social media is there stuff within social media, which I'm sure there is, there's stuff on social media that will actually work in a positive way with social anxiety? When I've looked at social anxiety content on social media, I have to say there's not a great deal out there.
No.
And actually the stuff that's there, it's good, but I still think it's quite
limited
or niche,
yes,
as it were. And then I think it's almost it's thinking about what strategies can you put in place to balance and manage the emotional responses mm-hmm. to that social media content. So then if you see something, a post, a photo, excuse me, of something that's making you feel anxious, what do you do?
Yeah.
For me, I'd be more inclined to think, oh, good for them, they're having a good time.
Yeah.
But I know that's hard.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that would probably be my response as well. I'd just think, oh, they look like they're having fun, or oh, that looks like fun. And I wouldn't necessarily feel bad about it. But then, as you say, if you are someone that would feel negative, well, how do you deal with that emotion?
I mean, you can obviously block. Yeah. You can limit what you see. But then that also brings, like, say, if you block someone, and let's say you know that person,
yeah,
or you work with that person, then there's that conversation, is there? Why did you block me?
Yeah.
And actually, you know, I wouldn't, you know, a few years ago, I wouldn't have dreamed of saying, because I don't want to see. But I'd probably feel okay saying that.
Yeah. Or maybe it's a case of, do you need to take a step back from social media? Like, you know, if you're constantly seeing things on Instagram, for example, that are upsetting you, or you're finding difficult or bring up these, do you need to reduce your time on that app? Do you need to get rid of the app? Or maybe you need to do things like, if you see a post like that and it makes you feel a certain way, do you need to take yourself out and do something to distract yourself? I suppose it's about each individual, if they are struggling with social media and the way it affects their social anxiety. It's like with anxiety in any sense, it's about working out what works for you as an individual.
And Charlotte brings up an important point about joining groups on Facebook, because when you join a group, there is a social aspect to that, that group. And, you know, I'm in a number of Facebook groups, either through a member or an admin of that group. And, you know, there's stuff that goes on sometimes in groups. There's disagreements, there's people becoming upset by things, or people not liking other people's comments. But I suppose with social media, there's stuff in place for those things happening. So I think you can report posts, can, you know, defriend them, delete them. And, you know, if there's stuff in groups or social media you don't like, then do it.
Oh, absolutely. And there are groups, like there's a social anxiety group on Facebook, which has got, I don't know, a lot of members. Mm. And that's very much a supportive group, isn't it? It's like you go on there and you see posts of people who really struggle with social anxiety. And I think that's more of a sort of a group where you have a sense of community. So actually, if it's something you're struggling with, a group like that can actually be quite a reassuring thing to be a part of.
I mean, following on from that, another anonymous contribution talked about following certain groups to gain advice, positivity, etc. Sometimes it doesn't always work that way. And they don't always get the advice they're looking for. So that's managing those expectations between the reality of being in an online group and communities, and it's the self-awareness of it.
Yeah.
It's being aware of the group and getting from it what you want.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sort of summing it all up now, it was really interesting that when we did a couple of polls on social media, ironically, we asked directly, does social media contribute to social anxiety? On Instagram, 97% said yes.
Wow, which is a huge number.
And 3% said no. And there was a lot of responses to that. On Facebook, it was 25% yes and 75% no. And I was considering why it might be such a complete difference in that. But I suppose if you look at Instagram, that's more a platform where users give us insight into their lives. So you've got, like, through your stories, you're saying this happens.
Yeah.
And you're presenting this. I think there's more pressure maybe on presenting the polished image.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, it's about sort of putting on your best posts, the ones that make make you look like you're having fun. It's all about trying to get those likes and those comments.
I think Facebook has a different role now. I think Facebook has it more connects friends, because you used to accumulate friends.
Yeah.
And then I use it for family sometimes as well.
Yeah, joining groups. There's so many Facebook groups. I think that's another aspect to it.
And I actually think Facebook has a more varied user base as well. Through I think of my Facebook friend list, there's more of an age range on there than there is on Instagram.
Yeah.
So actually, does social media contribute to social anxiety? For me, it doesn't, personally.
Same.
Really.
But then I suppose our contributions suggest that for some
it
absolutely does.
Yeah, it does. And I think it was really interesting receiving these contributions. And it just reminds us about the complexities of the relationship between social media and social anxiety. And as always, if you have any comments or want to provide feedback, please email us at socialanxietylife2023@gmail.com. And also, if you'd like to suggest any further episodes for us to cover, we'd be more than happy to receive these.
Yes, thank you so much for listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye.